It's March the 26th, and we're up to the third parak of Mesillas Yesharim. Bever Chelkei HaZehirus, in explaining the parts of Zehirus, the different components of Zehirus. So the Ramchal writes that someone who wants to do Zehirus, so there's two different things a person has to do. First of all, a person has to, we talked about being misbonin, about reflecting upon oneself, to think about one's actions. So a person has to be misbonin, what is the good that we're supposed to be doing, number one. And number two, are we doing it? So that's not very complicated. It makes a lot of sense. First of all, what am I supposed to be doing, and am I doing it? Now, the am I doing it part also has two parts to it, which is, I should be thinking about that, am I doing it at the moment that I'm doing things? Is what I am doing right now that which is what Hashem wants me to be doing, what I was put here to do, that which is going to bring me to Shleimus? And also, a person should be thinking about that when they're not doing those things, so that there should be a constant thinking about every action that we do at every moment. Am I doing that which Hashem wants me doing? Am I doing that which is going to bring me shleimus, bring me closer to Hashem? And then also, if there are general practices that we do, which we all do general things, so in advance of doing them, we should be thinking about whether they are generally in the right, in the category of that which should be done or not. And anything which is appropriate should be embraced and strengthened. Anything which is not appropriate should be pushed away, and a person should get away from that behavior. So this is a constant calculation a person needs to be doing about their lives, about themselves, about their actions, etc. Now, the Ramchal brings up a Gemara, which I'll read. The Gemara says in Erevin, the first part of the Gemara is one of these Gemaras that people have heard about but don't really know what it means, and that's not what he's discussing. He's really discussing the second part of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Noach lo adam shelo nivra yosem mishenivra. It's better for a person not to have been created than to have been created. That's the part he doesn't explain, because that's not really relevant to the point. But the next part is the relevant point. The Gemara says, Va'akshav shenivra, now that he was created, Yimash mesh b'maisav. V'akshav shenivra, yifash fesh b'maisav. He should examine his deeds. And once you're here, make sure you do a good job. V'yikadami, others say, Yimash mesh b'maisav, which also means to examine his deeds. So what's the difference between pishpush and mishmush? Sounds very similar. It's two different ways of reading the Gemara. The Gemara itself has two different versions, whether it's yifashfesh or yimashmesh. So yifashfesh means to examine. Yimashmesh means to feel. So the Ramchal says that yifashfesh means the general idea of looking into one's actions, making sure they're good. Yimashmesh, the imagery is a person who has a garment or some material, and a person wants to make sure that the garment or the material is completely sound. So the person is going through every square inch of the material and feeling it, pulling at it, touching it, to see whether there's anything wrong with each and every little part of the material of the garment. That's yimashmesh. So yifashmesh is more of a general look. Generally speaking, is this the garment that is appropriate, that I want to make something? I want to make a garment, so I need material. Is it the right color? Is it the right type of material? Is it big enough? Is it thick enough? That's the jets. That would be yifashfesh, to look into one's actions. Yimashmesh would be to then, after I've determined it's essentially the right thing, to go through each and every small part of it and make sure it's all exactly right the way it's supposed to be. So with our actions as well, there's the general look. Am I generally doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Generally, the different things I'm doing. And then there is the detailed examination of everything that we do to make sure it fits into exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us. That's Yifashvesh and Yimashmesh b'maisav. Now, as a person is doing this, and they're doing this examination, so Chazal say from the pasuk that appears in Parshas Chukas, they bring this idea of looking into one's actions. It's really a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and the pasuk says, "Al kein yomru hamoshlim bo'u cheshbon." Now we're going to explain the whole background of that pasuk before we say what Chazal say about that pasuk, because it's important to be able to put the two things together. The pasuk is talking about the nevuah of Bilam before Parshas Balak. This is at the end of Parshas Chukas, before Parshas Balak. So in that nevuah, there the at the end of Parshas Chukas, the Torah tells us about how Klal Yisrael conquered Sichon and Og. That's where the Torah first says that we defeated Sichon and Og. It says about Sichon and Og several times in the Torah, but usually it's talking about what happened. Here, it's the actual happening itself, that Klal Yisrael attacked Sichon and Og and defeated them. When it talks about Sichon, so it talks about how we defeated the city of Cheshbon, which was the city of Sichon. So, you know, since you went through Tamima, you know the concept of Amon Umoav Tiharu B'Sichon. I'll repeat it, I'm not going to put it on the spot. But the general idea over there is that that when we came to Eretz Yisrael and we conquered Eivor HaYarden, and then from Eivor Yarden, Moshe Rabbeinu was Nifter, and then from there, under Yehoshua, we crossed the Yarden and entered Eretz Yisrael from Yericho. So that's coming from the east, going west. Even though we came from Eretz Mitzrayim, and then we were at the south of Eretz Yisrael when we sent the Meraglim, but after the Maisa Meraglim, we had to wander a little bit and circle back, and when we came back to Eretz Yisrael to go in, we had to actually go south, go around Edom, go around Moab. If you're looking at the map from your perspective, so we were in Kadesh, which is just south of Eretz Yisrael. From Kadesh, we had to go south, go around Eretz Edom, around Eretz Moav, come back up north, now on the east side of Eretz Yisrael. We had been on the south of Eretz Yisrael, now we're on the east of Eretz Yisrael. Then we conquered Sichon and Og. Here's the Yarden, cross the Yarden, come into Eretz Yisrael from the east, going west. That's what we ended up doing. In order to do that, there had to be a land that was conquerable. And the problem was that we were not allowed to attack Edom. We were not allowed to attack Moab. We were not allowed to attack Ammon. Edom, Moab, and Ammon flanked the southern and eastern borders of Eretz Yisrael. So there was no way in, because we couldn't attack them, and they didn't allow us to go through. Then we asked permission, they said no. So we couldn't go through. So there had to be some way that we could get in. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did is that beyond the borders of Ammon and Moab, there were the countries of Sichon and Og that were on the Yarden, but they were not accessible from the Midbar where we were coming from. But Hashem had Sichon attack Moab, conquer a small portion of Moab. So now that land no longer belonged to Moab, it belonged to Sichon, to the Amori. And that once Sichon conquered that small portion of Moab, that was now land that we were allowed to conquer, because it was no longer owned by Moab. We weren't allowed to attack Moab, but we were allowed to attack Sichon. So once he attacked that small part and took it over, that small part jutted out to where the Midbar was. So when we came up on the east side of Eretz Yisrael, we were in the Midbar, and we turned west, there was a small little opening of area of land that was now not owned by Moab nor by Ammon. It was owned by Sichon. And we were now able to now attack through there and able to conquer Sichon and Og, and then from there we can go into Eretz Yisrael. So Ammon and Moab, the lands of Ammon, the land of Moab, Tiharu b'Sichon became Tahar, became accessible to us through Sichon. That's the concept of Amon Umoav Tiharu B'Sichon. when Sichon went to attack that area, that was the city of Cheshbon. That's what he conquered. The city of Cheshbon, which was owned by Moab, was the area that Sichon conquered that now made it accessible to us. Sichon didn't realize he was bringing about his own demise by doing this. Because by conquering Cheshbon, he opened the door for Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael couldn't attack Ammon and Moab, they could attack him. He didn't realize he was protected against Klal Yisrael by having the wall of Moab and Ammon between him and us. But when he conquered, he actually hurt himself. So that was the city of Cheshbon. Cheshbon was a fortress, and it was impossible for anybody to defeat the city of Cheshbon. Cheshbon was owned by Moab, and there was no way that Sichon could conquer it. He tried several times and failed. So then Sichon went to Bilam, and he asked Bilam to curse Cheshbon and Moab on his behalf. Bilam did, and that's how Sichon was able to then conquer Cheshbon, and he took it over. That precedes Parshas Balak, where Bilam tried to curse us and turned into a bracha. But there, that was a successful curse of Bilam. He cursed Cheshbon / Moab, and in that way, the Amori under Sichon were able to defeat it. That's why Balak, in the beginning of Parshas Balak, says, "Ki adati es asher tevarech mevorach ves asher ta'or you are." I know whoever you bench is benched, and whoever you curse is cursed. How did he know? He knew from the war of Sichon and the Amori against Cheshbon under Moab, because that was a successful curse of Bilam's. That's the story, which you all knew already, right? Okay, so when that was not discussed in Tamir? Really?
You discussed it with us like a few years ago. It was familiar as soon as you said it.
Okay. That's Amon Amon Tia Ruba Sichon. So when that happened, that curse and that battle is mentioned at the end of Parashas Chukas when we conquered Moab. So the Torah gives us a little background about it, and it says these psukim. So the psukim say, "Al kain yomru hamoshlim ba'u cheshbon tibaneh v'sikonein ir sichon." Therefore, the moshlim refers to Bilam, because we know that in Parshas Balak it says vayisa mishalo vayomar. It's called his mushal, is his nevuah. So the Moshlim were Bilam and his father Boor, which Chazal say, I don't know if it's his father or his ancestor, was Lavan. Bilam comes from Lavan. So it says, Al kein yomru ha-Moshlim. The Moshlim, those who say Mishalim, that's Bilam and Boor, Bo'u Cheshbon, come to Cheshbon, you, Sichon, come to Cheshbon, Tibaneh v'sikonein ir Sichon. The city of Cheshbon will be now built and established as the city of Sichon. It will switch from being the city of Moab to the city of Sichon. That's what that pasuk means. That's the direct meaning of that pasuk. Al kein yomru ha-moshlim bo Cheshbon. Therefore the Moshlim, Bilam / Boar, will say, come to Cheshbon, referring to Sichon. Come to Cheshbon, Tibaneh v'sikonein ir Sichon. It's now going to be rebuilt and reestablished as the city of Sichon. And then they go on to say other curses against Moab and pronouncements that now it's going to become, that's that area of Moab, that city, is now going to become owned by Sichon.
Wait, who said this pasuk to who?
So Bilam said that pasuk, I assume, talking to Sichon. Or just in general. You know, it was probably the same thing that happened with the Jews, that they brought him to an area where he could see Moab, or see Cheshbon, and he pronounced this curse, mm-hmm. which is what he wanted to do to us also.
This was the curse.
This was the curse, right. And it goes on with more. There are more psukim after that. But that's the first pasuk of the curse. I guess it's a curse, right, of the call. So Chazal take that pasuk out of context, and they make a drasha. And they say, Al kein yomru ha-moshlim. Therefore, the Moshlim, those who rule over Moshel, those who rule over their Yetzer Hara, they should say, Bo'u Cheshbon, come to calculations. Cheshbon meaning to calculate. Bo'u Cheshbon. Tiboneh b'sikonein ir sichon. So, how does Chazal say that over there? One second. Tiboneh b'sikonein, it's Gemara Baba Basra. Tiboneh b'sikonein, you'll be rebuilt, you'll be established. Ir sichon. Okay, I don't remember offhand how that goes. Ir sichon. Because the Gemara talks about siach. The Gemara talks about like a donkey that goes after a sichana. That when you speak, a young donkey, when you speak nicely to it, it follows you. It does what you ask it to do. Okay, I don't remember how that last part of the puzzle works out. But Al-Kain Yomur Moshlim Bo Cheshbon. Therefore, the Moshlim, those who are emotional in their Yetzer, what do they say? They say Bo Cheshbon. What cheshbon do they tell you to do? In other words, those who are already in control of their Yetzer Hara, like we spoke about last week, there are people who have reached the Madrega where they've conquered their basic Yetzer Hara, the normal Yetzer Hara, David HaMelech, for example, where there's no one. We talked about Rav Amram last week, the Amor of Amram. So they've conquered their Yetzer Hara. So they're giving us advice. We who have not yet reached that Madrega, they're saying, you want to know how to do it? Bo'u cheshbon. Come and make a cheshbon. If you want to defeat your Yetzer Hara. What cheshbon? The cheshbon is, like the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, hefsid mitzvah keneged schara, schara veira keneged hefseda. The loss of a mitzvah against its gain, and the gain of an avera against its loss. That a person should make that cheshbon. Person should make that cheshbon. If you make that cheshbon, the loss of a mitzvah against its gain, and the gain of a avera against its loss, then you too will become a moshel. You'll become one of the moishlim. You'll become one of the people who rules over your Yetzirah instead of the other way around, the Yetzirah ruling over a person. The way you do that is with this cheshbon, the cheshbon of hefsid mitzvah keneged schara, schar avera keneged avseda. Now, this is critical because we think of mitzvahs as good and averas as bad. I'm not discouraging that. Right, that's true. Mitzvahs are good, averas are bad. However, when we think of it that way, we are, in a small way, maybe a big way, we are really not being 100% truthful. Because to say that a mitzvah is 100% good and avera is 100% bad, it's true from a shlemus perspective, but from a human perspective, that's not really true. Meaning that when I go to do a mitzvah, I do need to give something up to do the mitzvah. Some mitzvahs are very hard to do, like fasting on Yom Kippur. So I'm giving up eating. That's not a fun thing to do. So there is a loss. The loss is that I have to endure fasting. Now, it's a mitzvah, so the schar is unbelievable. But there is a sense of loss physically that I don't like what I'm doing. And really, let's not take such a dramatic case. Let's just take the case of not listening to Lashon Hara, where we know that there's Lashon Hara about to be spoken or being spoken, and we walk away. Well, we're giving up the juicy information. We're giving up the ability to socialize in that way and be recognized in that way. We give something up when we keep the Torah. So there is a hefsid mitzvah. And after all, why do we not want to do the mitzvahs? We don't want to do the mitzvahs because there's a challenge involved. So the Chazal are saying to us, be honest. Be honest with yourself. What am I giving up by doing this mitzvah? I'm giving something up. It's hurting me in some way. If it didn't hurt me at all, why wouldn't I do it? Why am I struggling? I'm only struggling because there's a reason why I don't want to do it. There's a reason. There's something pulling me the other way. So admit it. Admit what that something is and think about it. Don't sweep it under the carpet. Say, I don't want to do this mitzvah because, and fill in the because, fill in the blank. I don't want to do this mitzvah. I'd rather not daven right now because there's something else I want to do. Because I don't really feel like it right now. I'm lazy because I'd rather be reading my book. Let's be honest. That's why I don't want to daven right now. So make the cheshbon of the hefsid mitzvah, keneged schara, and then make let's compare that to what the reward is. My mother told me to do whatever, to polish the silver. I'm not interested. I don't want to do it. I'd rather be doing something else right now. I don't want to get my hands dirty. Whatever it is, I don't want. So take that, admit what I don't want to be doing, why, and then compare that to the schar. What am I going to get for doing it? All the reward in Olam Haba, the reward in Olam Hazeh, just put it all together. Think it through. Similarly, think through the schar avera. Can I get a seda? What's schar avera? The schar avera is the enjoyment in doing the avera. Don't pretend there's no enjoyment. Of course there's enjoyment, otherwise we wouldn't have a Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is encouraging us to enjoy it. And forget about what the consequences are. So Chazal are saying, don't sweep the enjoyment out of the carpet. Admit that there is enjoyment. I like listening to the Lashon Hara. It's gishmak. I like hearing it. I like being part of the crowd. And I like listening to it. It's very, very interesting. So let's admit that there's a pull here. And at the same time, compare that to what the loss is. What's the punishment? The distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How much it's going to hurt. Go through all of that too. Make that cheshbon. So Chazal are saying, those who already have been Moshel B'Yitzram, they're telling us, you know how we got here? We got here by making this cheshbon. When you make this cheshbon, then you get here. It seems like a simple cheshbon, meaning that we all know whatever schar we think of that is associated with an Avera, whatever enjoyment the Avera brings, we know that the loss is much, much greater. And whatever loss there is in doing a mitzvah, we know the gain, the reward is much, much greater. We all know that. But like we started with Mesilas HaSharim, the fact that we all know that is precisely why we have to think about it. Because when you just say, oh, I know that already, and you don't think about it, then it doesn't make a Rishim. If you wanted to have a Rishim on you, then even though it's obvious and you know it, you got to think about it anyway. Make the cheshbon. Sit down and make the cheshbon. Either write it down or think it through, but make the cheshbon. Think it through. And that will make you have the ability to overcome your Yetzirah by doing this. And you will become a Mishal. You'll become a ruler over your Yetzirah, just like those who came before us. Now, There's two other points that the Mesilas HaSharim makes in this parak, and I want to say them, but I want to come back to this because I want to talk about the relationship between this and the pashup shot in the pasuk of Abilam and Sichon and Moav and Amon. But let's just at least first finish up what the Mesilas HaSharim says in the rest of the parak. He says that there are two types of mistakes a person can make if they don't make the cheshbon. A person can delude themselves in Olam Hazeh, because Olam Hazeh is doima la laila. It says, Tashas choshech vihi laila. We'll say this Mirtz Hashem on Tuesday morning, the Yom for Tuesday, the Rosh Chodesh. The Rosh Chodesh, the Yom for Rosh Chodesh is Barchi Nafshi. In Barchi Nafshi, it says, Tashas choshech vihi laila, that the darkness will come and it'll be nighttime. Darkness is, that's Olam Hazeh, which is doima la laila. Why is Olam Hazeh Doma LaLaila? Because when things are dark, things are confusing. You can't see well, then you get things confused. So he says there's two types of confusions that can happen in the nighttime. One is there can be a danger that you don't see at all. A person could be walking along, not knowing there's any problem, and all of a sudden fall off a cliff. There's a huge drop right in front of them. They can't see it because it's dark. So a person, the ra'ah, he says, could come upon a person before they even realize it's there. And all of a sudden, they're destroyed. That's a terrible danger in the laila of Olam Hazeh. A person who doesn't make a cheshbon might be walking right off a cliff and doesn't chap that it's about to happen. Says the Ramchal, even worse, what laila does is you can confuse two things. You can look at two different things and you can think that one thing is something else. You can see a pole and think that it's a tree, and see a tree and think it's a person, right? There's all kinds of mistakes you can make because the light isn't good and you're confused. So he says that that's also a danger in Olam Hazeh, because you can see something that is bad and it appears good. And you can see something good and it appears bad. Olam Hazeh does that. It confuses us. It's like a mist that clouds our vision, and things don't look clear, and you're looking and you say, oh, that looks like what I want, and you really don't want it. It's exactly what you want to avoid. And the other way around, you say, oh, I don't want to go there. That looks terrible. No, but you really do want to go there. So that it, by making this cheshbon, we get past both of these dangers. First of all, by making the cheshbon, we see the bad right in front of us. And second of all, more importantly, we don't confuse good for bad and bad for good. Finally, the Ramchal writes about this, that the I think it's a beautiful mashal. It's the mashal of the maize, of the maze that we think about as a corn maze, but which I've never been on. I really want to go to one. I've never been to a corn maze. I always wanted to go. But he talks about bushes that are cut into a maze, and the goal is to get to an achsadra, to get to a platform that's in the middle of the maze. Big area with this huge maze, and there's an achsadra, there's a platform in the middle where you can get to which you're supposed to get to. So you don't know, you're walking through all the paths look the same, and you come to a dead end, you got to retrace your steps, and you're going to try to get around to find that.
So
what's that?
They are so annoying.
They're so annoying, really? Okay. You're saying I shouldn't want to go so badly? Okay. So he says that. But the goal that he's talking about is not to get through it, but to get to this platform in the middle. When you get to the platform in the middle, the way he's picturing it is you get to the platform in the middle, then you go up steps onto the top of the platform. From the top of the platform, you can look out and see a bird's eye view of the maze. So if you communicate with a person, you yell to a person who's still in the maze, you could tell them where to go. Because you're standing on the platform. So you can see. So someone is all confused in the maze. You can say, no, make a right. No, don't make a left. Go straight. You can tell them where to go so they can get to where they have to go. Because you have a better perspective. So he says, that's the mashal over here. The moshlim b'yitzrim are those who have gotten to the achsadra. They're already on the platform. They've made it. And we are still bumbling through that maze, not knowing where to go. And we keep hitting a dead end. And we have to turn around and whatever it is. So they're yelling at us. They're standing on top of the platform, yelling to us, no, this is what you need to do. You want to get to where I am, right? Here's what you need to do. You know what you need to do? Bo cheshbon. Make a cheshbon. Hefsid mitzvah keneged schara, schara avera keneged hefseda. That's what they're telling us. And we, if we listen to them, we'll also get to where they are. If we choose to ignore them, we're not going to get there. So the Ramchal is saying, Chazal are telling us, they are there already. They're telling us, this is what you need to do if you want to get to where we are. It sounds so simple, this bo cheshbon, but it really is the formula. And it really epitomizes the point that Ramchal is trying to make in the whole Sefer, which is the whole thing is simple, but we don't do it because of its simplicity. It just seems too simple. But it's not rocket science. It really is simple. And this is the formula to do it. Now, it is really unbelievable that the pasuk, which is a nevuah of Bilam to Sichon, one Rasha to another, to defeat Moav, which is another Rasha, which is then enabling Klal Yisrael to come through, that it's that pasuk from where we learn this yesod, this incredible yesod of bo cheshbon. So what is the connection between the nevuah of Bilam and this whole discussion? So, I mean, you probably already see where we're going with this. From Bilam's and Sichon's and the country of Moab's perspective, that battle had nothing to do with Klal Yisrael, had nothing to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, had nothing to do with right and wrong. It had everything to do with Olam Hazeh. I want, and I can't get it, I want it. Curse them. Okay, I'll curse them, but you owe me money for it. Can you pay me? You have the money to pay me? Yeah, I can pay you. Okay, fine. It's a business deal. Bilam wanted money and fame. Sichon wanted territory and money. Moav wanted territory and money. That's all. That's what it was all about. It was petty. It was completely Olam Hazeh. It was Taiva, it was Kavod, that's what it was. Kina, perhaps. It was all of the things, Kina, Taiva, Kavod, Matzina, Sadam, and Olam. That's what it was. That's what it was all about. What they didn't realize is the whole thing was playing into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. The whole thing. The entire thing. Sichon wanting to get Cheshbon, not being able to get it, having to go to Bilam. It set everything up. It set the stage for Klal Yisrael to come through, and it also set the stage for Bilam to be hired to curse us, and it turned into a bracha, and it to show the difference between the V.A. Umos Sa'olam and the V.A. of Klal Yisrael. All of those very important foundational concepts of Klal Yisrael, it was all set up with this Maisa of Bilam, Sichon, Moav, all of that where they had no idea. So they were dealing with something totally Olam Hazeh, and really had to do with Nitzchias, it had to do with us, it had to do with Eretz Yisrael. Our first ability to get Eretz Yisrael came from this. They were stuck in Olam Hazeh. All they cared about was Olam Hazeh. Hakin, Avatai, Avakavah. That's all they focused on. And therefore, everything was Laila for them. Everything was darkness. Everything was confused. They saw it as conquest. Sichon saw this as a gain, as a power move, as a way of establishing himself as the power in the region and the money. Bilam saw this as a power move, establishing himself as the oracle, the Mekalel, the one who you hire instead of wasting money on a whole bunch of armies. Just pay him all that money and he'll win for you and he can beat any army. It's all about that. That's all they saw because they were Shaku and Olam Hazeh. They saw Lila. That's it. They were confused. But really, they were falling off a cliff. They were literally walking off a cliff. Something which they thought was great was really terrible. It was really their demise. That's the way that Sichon went down, that's the way that Bilam went down. Both Sichon and Bilam were killed because of this Maisa. Because through this, all the events following Parshas Chukas, which is Balak, and Pinchas Matas Masa, all of that comes through this Maisa. So here you have a stark example of this Laila of Olam Hazeh not realizing at all what's going on. Those were Rishayim. They don't understand it, and they never understand it. But the real cheshbon, those who are really maishlim, the real rulers over the Yetzer, they chap, they see, and they understand. It's really all for Klal Yisrael. It's really all for Nitzchias. It's really all for Ruchnias. It's really all for Shlemus. It's really all for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. So it becomes a prime example. And from there, we have the diuk in the pasuk of Bayu Cheshbon, come and make a Cheshbon. So it works out together. That's the concept of Bayu Cheshbon. This is a good thing to remember for the summertime, because this is really, that's when we have these parashas. These parashas are right before the 3 weeks and then during the 3 weeks. That's when these parashas come up. So it's a good thing to remember for that time, to when you get to these psukim, in Chukas and Balak and Pinchas, Matas, Masay, those psukim over there, that's a very good thing. This is the issue that we have here in this little show. Any questions?
Yeah. Is everything something that either takes us closer to Hashem or far away? Is there anything that's...
It doesn't seem like there's a parav.
Like everything is a cheshbon, is this bringing...
It
seems so what do you do with the things that you can't really place? Does it mean that it's taking you away from Hashem?
That's a good question. I don't think that the default is it's taking away from Hashem. It could be we haven't thought it through enough to understand why to do it or not to do it. If we do things senselessly, then yeah, ultimately it's going to take us away from Hashem. But just because I can't think of right now, their relaxation has its place in bringing us closer to Hashem. Same thing, you said, how's relaxation? There is an element of relaxation that brings us closer to Hashem. If that's what is needed, then it is important. It's a question of going through and figuring out whether it's really necessary or not, or what its function really is. We told the story last week. Did we tell the story last week about relaxation? My father and Revelia. Scharbacha.
Basketball.
Basketball. Yeah. Right? Okay, we told a story last week. Was the last week you told a story?
Yeah.
Go
was
a week ago. I'll tell you the thing. I'll get back to it. Let's see if there's any other question. I'll tell you the Maisa.
I heard the basketball.
You heard it? Yeah. Okay. So I'm saying, you can even something which is, you know, what's that all about? But there could be reason for it. Look, a person has to sleep, a person has to eat. You know, we're not robots. A person has to be able to live.
But more things that are for, like, entertainment or like just fun or pleasure.
Right. So it's true we live in a society that glorifies entertainment and pleasure, and that's what it's all about. And we definitely indulge in that far more than anybody who ever did before us in history, as a country, as a culture. There may have been individuals who indulged as much as we do, but as a culture, we certainly indulge far more than anybody ever did before. And that's not a healthy thing. There's no question it's not a healthy thing. However, a person also has to admit where they are. This is where we are. A person has to deal with themselves where they are. A person can't delude themselves into thinking that they're bigger than they are and able to handle more than they can handle. So that it's not a bad thing for a person to say, okay, this is who I am, this is what I can handle right now. But it makes a difference for our goals, goal setting. It's where are we headed? What are we trying to do? And to say to ourselves that, okay, right now this is where I am. I'd like to see improvement in this area. I don't want to be so entrenched in entertainment and just pleasurable experiences as I get older. The emes, though, that life itself will pull everybody away from those things. As a person who's living a Torah lifestyle, life gets very, very, very busy. And there's just less time. There's less time for these things. That's what's going to happen. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. A family, small children, you just don't have time. Really, it's a question of adjustment. Someone who is used to having their own time and to use their time and enjoy their time the way they like it, the transition between that and family life is a transition. First with a husband, then with children. That's a real transition. I know that's not what we started talking about, but my wife says, you know, people talk about what's the hardest, you know, is it harder to have your second child? Do you want to go from one to two? Is it harder if you have your third child? You know, my wife always used to say, going from none to one is the biggest adjustment. That's the hardest. Because you go from, it's your time, to it's not your time. You're totally meshubed to somebody else. Totally. Completely. It's not your time anymore. So she always says that's the hardest transition to make. So look, we're all like that. Everybody before they have families are like that, and then when we have families, we have to adjust out of that. So that's really, as I say, it's going to happen by itself. But a person can think about it, so we don't go into that kicking and screaming. We go into that looking forward to it, because that's the way. I mean, ultimately, yes, we are definitely more shakua in pleasures and entertainment than anybody ever did before us, and it's really not ultimately what is healthy and good for us. At the same time, I just want to emphasize, at the same time, a person shouldn't delude themselves in the thing they don't need it. I don't need it. I can just do completely, my whole day is going to be only focused on Shem Shemaim. We're not on that madrega. Halavai, we should be able to do that. Halavai, when we're doing the things that are mitzvahs, we're focused L'Shem Shemaim. Halavai, we should be able to do that. That, you know, halavai, when we daven, we should be able to have kavanah every word that we say. We're not on that madrega. We have to admit where we are and deal with ourselves where we are. And, you know, halavai, we don't do any averis. But, you know, that's a madriga.